My name's Simon and I'm an addict. Okay. I'm very grateful that all of Petra's supporters have taken the front row. Thank you for that. So I'm not now certain how many people have come to support me. So I don't see any of my sponsees, and they will all be back on step one again tomorrow. Such is life in the big city. Thank you for coming. I think that sometimes at conventions it can be kind of hard work, you know. A big room one speak, and then 15 minutes, and then another meeting, and then 15 minutes, and another meeting. And so I really appreciate you coming. Feel free to leave at any point you like. Preferably after I've finished, if that's okay. And maybe just before Petra, just as a courtesy. The spirit of service. I genuinely will do my best to keep to topic and to tell the truth. Frankly, neither of which I'm renowned for, but I will do my best. When you get an email asking if you'll speak at a European convention, it seems like a really good idea. And as the days approach, it seems like less and less a good idea. And this morning, it seemed like a really not very good idea at all, frankly. But this is not the first time I've done this. I think in America, they say, this is not my first rodeo. I'm not sure how many of those people have actually done a rodeo, but I think it's just an expression, right? So this is not my first rodeo. The last day I used was on the 19th of December, 1985. And thank you. And I take very little credit for that. It wasn't my plan. And I heard someone say at a convention a long time ago, I don't say that to impress you. I say that to impress upon you that I still need to come, right? And I come here because I don't really have anywhere better to go. Very briefly, I come from what my family would call a loving family, but I have come to understand was a deeply codependent and dysfunctional unit that pretended to be a loving family. They did their best. I've worked hard on freeing myself from the wreckage of my past, which includes the period before I actually picked up drugs, because I suffered a lot, and this is my story, and I know lots of people have relatively suffered far more than me, and continue to around the world. But this is my story, and it was really difficult for me as a child. I was put in a private boys' school when I was very young, 11 years old, and was tortured and sexually abused, and it was a very tough 8 years there. I've come to understand and be very clear now that it wasn't my fault what happened to me. It wasn't my mother's fault for sending me there. It wasn't my father's fault for being an unresolved alcoholic who died of his disease. It wasn't his brother's fault or his mother's fault. They were people on their own journey, and I am here as a result of the journey that I'm on. And without any of that, there would be none of this. And that understanding, I think, is really important to me in terms of my relationship with you as individual humans, and as a kind of an entity, you know, as members of NA. When I came to NA, I was institutionalized. I was 28. I wasn't what I've heard described as a hope to die dope fiend. I wanted to die, but my actual physical using career was short. You know, I didn't use for 300 years. I didn't inject in my neck. I didn't do life in jail. I didn't do any of those things. But I was desperate and lonely, and I reached the end of my road. I was pretty certain I was going to die doing this, doing that. I had a memory a while ago, I used to stand in front of a mirror with a picture of Keith Richards and try and make my face look like him, because I thought he was just the coolest guy, right? Because I heard that every 6 months he went to Switzerland and had his blood changed. And I just thought, what a great thing. When I think about that now, it reminds me just how kind of distorted my world was and how distorted my understanding of my place in this world had become. I was isolated, disconnected from pretty much everyone. I lived in a room at my mother's house. Both my brother and sister had grown up and moved out. And I hadn't grown up and didn't move out. And I was just alone in this room. And I remember sitting in that room, counting the cars that went past in the street outside. And every 20 cars, I'd go back downstairs and phone my dealer to see if he was going to answer the phone yet. And I would do that for hours. So eventually I was institutionalized, and somebody like me, like you, did service. And they drove to this big house on a hill in the middle of the countryside on a Sunday afternoon and sat in an NA meeting and told their story. And that was the first meeting I'd ever been in. I didn't really know what a meeting was. I didn't have any real clue what NA was. I was still rattling, you know. I was still not sleeping. I was still sweating. My skin was like a chicken. And this guy, his name was Mickey, and I don't think actually he knew I existed. I never met him. I never spoke to him directly. I never like acknowledged him. But he came and told his story, and I got it. There was no like celestial choirs and flashes of light through stained glass windows. You know, it wasn't anything like, there was no epiphany like that. But I do remember in that meeting thinking, I want to do this. And that's what I did. I didn't use again from that day. And I left that place and I went into a kind of like a halfway house. Where a group of men would sit around it for 2 hours every day, just misdirecting their anger at each other, right? And someone would sit there and supposedly take responsibility for it. But, you know, I learned through that process, and then in the evenings we'd go to meetings, I learned that there was a way I could live my life that didn't involve using every day. And I was all in. I'm not sure that I had any choice. You know, I didn't really know any other thing that I could possibly do. And I remember being really convinced in that first meeting that this is what I wanted to do. This is a club I wanted to join. And so I went to every, there were five meetings a week in this town, and I went to every one of them. And I got involved in service. And one day somebody said, do you want to come to the area committee meeting? And I think probably before he'd finished the sentence, I said, yeah, okay. And we got in a car and we drove the 20 miles or what it was to this area meeting. And I sat in the meeting and I took on seven service positions because there were seven vacancies, right? And I said, I'll do that. And so I can laugh about it now. But, you know, what I've realized, and I think hindsight is a great quality. I'd quite like hindsight before the event sometimes, but I only ever seem to get it afterwards. And what I came to understand was that I was desperate to be a part of, and it felt like if I put up my hand and volunteered to do something, you were less likely to tell me to go away. Because I knew, deep down, that if you found out who I was, you'd turn your back on me and you wouldn't invite me anywhere. You wouldn't let me come in. You'd stand at the door and say, no, you can't come in, because we know who you are. So I thought if I took on all these things, I'd become kind of indispensable. And some years later, working some steps with a sponsor and generating a little bit of self-awareness, I came to understand there was another reason I took those positions on. And that was because NA was a mess, and I had arrived just in time to save it. If it wasn't for me, it would have just not made it. And that was a slightly more painful realization that came over time. But what happened was, people like you said to me, maybe just do one thing. You know, choose one thing and do it well and finish it. And then maybe choose one thing and do it well and finish it. So I kind of let go of all of these other things. And I stayed on one bit of service. And I've done public information service for, I'm in the fat end of 40 years now in one way or another. And I'm a PI guy. And there are lots of other things to do in NA. There are lots of choices and lots of things to learn about and lots of ways to give back to NA and to our communities. But I found that doing public information work, going out there and speaking to people who weren't members, who met members, and asked them to help us persuade members, potential members to come to NA, was something I was good at. So I did that. What I really did in NA was just kept coming back. I don't claim any kind of credit for... I noticed, worryingly, that Petra has a copy of a book next to an NA piece of literature, and as soon as I saw that, I thought, God, should I have brought a book? I'm not one of those people who really can quote extensively from literature. I'm just not, and I make no judgment about that. I think it's great that you've done that, but that's not how I have, you know, lived my recovery. Really, what I've done is I've showed up, and I've got involved. And I've served NA. And for me, in the earliest part of my recovery, the best way of describing the spirit of service for me was it came out of desperation. I wanted to be here enough to do what was necessary. I've lost count of the number of times I've heard people say, I went to my first meeting and someone got me involved. They got me to put the chairs away at the end of the meeting, and they said, if you come early next week, you can help put the chairs out again, and if you want to do the washing up. And those were the reasons why people came back to NA. And I often think it's just that simple, you know. I think that in many ways, the spirit of service is giving people a reason to come back here. It's really easy when you're new to find reasons to not come back. I have watched so many people coming into NA and not coming back, and people who come back for a while and then stop coming. You know, I don't think that there are supposedly some numbers around this, and I'm sure you've heard these apocryphal numbers, like 5 or 7% of people who walk into NA meetings achieve long-term recovery in NA. And I, frankly, I don't know how they came up with that, because we don't keep rolls. So I think it's kind of guesswork. I understand that you can make some judgments and guesswork, but I would think it's a bit more than that. But the reality is that lots of people who come to NA don't come back to NA. For me, lots of people come to NA by mistake, right? Their families tell them to come, their counselor tell some, you know, they come and they find this isn't for them, right? Not many people come back to NA by mistake. And I think that's really an important idea. So I've kind of tried to encourage people to at least come back once. Just come back once more. If this is not what you thought it would be, try another meeting. Because, you know, you're not here by coincidence. And so I think, you know, I've always tried to encourage people to come to meetings. I now have a lot of sponsees. I really rarely say no to someone who asks me to sponsor them. That's not an invitation. You may not want me to sponsor you after hearing me. But I have probably, I don't know. I have some sponsees who regularly do step work. And I have lots of people who've asked me to sponsor them who I never see again. And I think that's really normal. That seems to be the experience of lots of people. But I have a few sponsees who are really consistent and work their way through the steps and the traditions. And one of the common threads in I was going to say my stable of sponsees, but that sounds terribly arrogant. It's not what I mean at all. I'm by no means a stable owner, but I think you know what I mean by that. I think that they do service. You know, for me, it's really important that the people I sponsor are of service in NA. And the practical reality is that I don't think anyone would ask me to sponsor them if they weren't doing service. It seems would be strange to me if they did. So, you know, when I go, I don't know how many of you have gone up to the 10th floor and had a look at what's going on up there to the European delegates meeting. I've been involved in that on and off for 30 years, I guess. God, it seems so strange. Yeah, for a long time. And I love that room. I love what goes on in there. I love the commitment of those people. And I know what it's like to sit in that room for 7 hours a day and miss this. You know, they're up there working, doing strategy, working out how we seat new communities in our region, in our zone, all sorts of budgeting and strategic issues, helping smaller communities to develop. And they miss this. They don't finish until 6:30. The odd one might be working their way in now, because I guess we're kind of getting to that time of day. And I see that Petra snuck out early from upstairs. I'm sure she's missed. I'm sure it won't be anything like as good without her being there. But it's really important to acknowledge that, I think. And I would really encourage you, if you haven't already, to go to the elevators and go up to the 10th floor. There's observer seats around the side, and you can sit and listen for a while and just get a sense of the kind of stuff that's going on, right? Because the truth is that this convention has emerged out of that meeting. This convention funds the delegates' work around the 30-something communities within the European zone now. So I'd really encourage you to go up, and if you see people around that table and then you see them somewhere else, thank them for the work that they do. I'm a big one for thanking people for their service. Because I think it's really important. I'm going to try and talk more generally. I'm sure Petra will do better at this part. The spirit of service for me is engendered in things like generosity, acceptance, humility, consistency. And these are all things that I came into Narcotics Anonymous with a distinct lack of. And they're things that I want to work on. And there's a line in the basic text that says, in our service work, we put into practice what we learn in the steps. And I like that people are nodding. I think it's one of the best things we've written. Because it's the truth. You know, we have over the years been wealthy as an organization. We can generate money if we need to. And we could pay people to do a lot of the stuff that we do. But I think it's really important that we do it ourselves. You know, in my recovery, I have learned how to let go of a service position with humility. I've learned to ask for help. I've learned to accept a decision I don't agree with. I've learned to use a computer. I've learned to speak to professionals and use NA language in an inclusive way. You know, we are like many structures in that we have a language that's unique to us. It's, you know, it's called extended dialogue, and it's quite common. And if you imagine like the police or hospitals or the or criminal justice or the government, they have a language that is, covers a lot more ground than most normal people would. And when you listen to them speak, it's very hard to understand them. And we have lots of language like that in NA, which is fine. It just makes it a bit more challenging for people when we go and speak to them about NA. It's obviously important we need to adjust that language slightly so that they understand what we're talking about. So if I go and speak to a group of nurses, there's no point in talking about H&I or an ASC, or because they don't really know what I'm talking about. So a part of, for me, developing an understanding of service and an ability to be of service to NA is to learn stuff. You know, I came in with an incomplete understanding of pretty much everything. I knew quite a lot about drugs. You know, I'd studied pharmacopoeia. I had a copy of MIMS, which, you know, for those of you who know what MIMS is, it's an important book if you take a lot of drugs, because it tells you whether you'll die or not if you take this drug. But I've learned a lot of stuff here. So for me, being engaged in service has really been an important part of my education and my development as a human, and a person in long-term abstinence-based recovery. Because, you know, I've been clean for a lot longer than I've been alive. You know, I mean, than the time before. So my clean time is longer than my time before I got clean. That's a very clumsy way of saying that, but you know what I mean, right? And the fact is, I've been clean for longer than a lot of you have been alive. And that's a really scary thought, I tell you. That really depresses me. When I go home, it's one of the things I think about. Back to my room, I look around the room and I think, God, you were a thought when I stopped using. Anyway, a good thought, nevertheless. But the other thing that I haven't said, and I think is really important, is in service, I meet people. You know, I learn about other people. I learn the people I want to be around and the people I don't want to be around. As my sponsor regularly says to me, you need to love everyone, Simon, but you're allowed to love some people from a long way away. And there are people I avoid, you know, that just are. And that's not, I don't mean that to be an insult or, you know, that's me on my journey. I need to look after myself and my family, and so I choose the people I'm around. There is actually, I learned this in learning about network theory, which is something called homophilia, which is really interesting, how certain people are attracted to certain people and, you know, repelled by other people. And it's actually, you know, there's a basis of evidence in this. So it's really understandable that when I'm in NA, I come to a convention, there are people I think, I really like you, you know, you're interesting, I want to talk to you more. And they're people I've never met. And I think that's fascinating. And but it's not everyone. It's not everyone. And it's okay that it's not everyone. It really is. I think as I've grown in my recovery, I've become more more human, more accepting of the things that I'm not. So it's easier for me to see who I am. I'm less intolerant of the things that I don't like about myself. You know, I come here because I have the disease of addiction. It's largely in remission because I do certain things every day and I don't, you know, don't use. So I don't use, and I do my best to work on my recovery, and I do my best to serve others, and I go to meetings as regularly as I can, and I sponsor and am sponsored. And as a result of that, the rewards are that I have freedom in my life and in my heart to be there for other people. And that a lot of that is here. You know, in NA, I just had a fantastic conversation with someone I probably have known for 30 years. I probably met them more than 30 years ago. And some years ago, they lost a child to this disease. And we just had a really good conversation. And it's clear, you know, this will never end. And it's clear how emotional they were and how this rises in, you know, grieving is it's a dreadful thing, but at the same time, it's an extraordinary way that our heart is open, it's like cracked open. And I was able to be with her and hear her talking about her child and how she's managing her life now, and really, really kind of, you know, open my heart and hear that and hug her. And it's just, what a privilege that is. I didn't care about anyone. I think if Keith Richards had come round to my house, I'd have been really nice to him, right? But the reality is, my life was utterly transactional. It was like, what about me? What about what's in it for me? Everything was a transaction, and it really isn't now. I really understand, on a good day, I really understand the value of just giving. Because the rewards come when they come. You know, it doesn't need to be an exchange. It needs to be a gift. And I've learned about myself. I don't tell people this very much. But I've learned about myself that I have too much love inside. I think that's one of the things about us. I think we have too much love. And it hurts because we don't know what to do with it. For me, my pain comes from my, you know, I look around the world and I see, you know, these just breathtaking cruelties and unfairness, and it hurts my spirit. It really, it feels painful to me. And I know that the solution for me for that is to love people. And I, you know, I can't love people in the Middle East. I can love people in Rotterdam.
Maar als je dus,
and I can love people in North Wales, where I now live. And I can act. That love is an action. You know, it's nice to think I really love you, but actually what that means is when someone comes to talk to me, give them the time to let them speak. My sponsor always says this to me. He says, find someone to listen to at a meeting. Because he knows what I'm like. I flap my gums a lot. You know, I talk away my emotions a lot. The reason I talk is because I feel anxious. And I talk over my feelings so I don't feel. And the solution to that is to, I was going to swear then, to shut that up, right? And listen. And it's such a privilege to listen to people. You know, as I said to my friend earlier on, you know where I am. You know how to find me. If you ever need to talk about this, I will be there and you can do that. And I love that I can do that and mean it. You know, I would love that she did that. And people do. You know, one of the extraordinary things about being in recovery for a long time is that I know a lot of people, and a lot of those people care about me and want to help me in my recovery. And people call me up and ask me stuff. And people run up to me here and go, hi, do you remember me? And I go, my regular answer is it Crime Watch? America's Most Wanted? Because I don't have a very good memory, right? I just don't. I'm never sure if it's too many drugs or not enough drugs. Anyway, but I don't have very good short-term memory. So I kind of know that I know people. I don't really know their name, and I don't remember where from. So if I do that to you, forgive me, and do be clearer when you tell me where I know you from, and I'll be as convincing as I can that I remember. Okay? Because the reality is, I love you. And that means something different to what it did. You know, when I was early in my recovery, and before I came into NA, I Love You had a very different tone, flavor, taste, meaning than it does now. You know, I Love You now is part of that reading. You know, I believe in you, and I want to help you in your recovery. And if I can, ask me. Because I am here because of you. And if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. Well, I guess it's the same thing, right? That's my alarm. I want to say one more thing, right? And I love saying this. I love saying this at the end of shares. There are something like 76,000 meetings a week around the world, right? And what that means is, pretty much every minute of every hour of every day, someone is holding the hands of two people saying the Serenity Prayer. What a fucking trip. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, what a trip. I mean, what a trip, man. Really. So when the tide is out, when your recovery tide is out and you're struggling and it feels like you're walking in treacle, right? Remember that someone, somewhere, is saying the Serenity Prayer for you. Right? And at the end of this meeting, if you're still here, if you haven't jogged, if you're still here, and we make a big circle at the end, right? Say it for them. Thanks for listening.